are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
And wouldn't you be on May 2nd? And yesterday was May 1st.
Yes, it was. It usually works that way.
It may
the 2nd follows the 1st in May.
I get that.
Unlike November, where they're reversed.
But you know what everybody asked me yesterday, Paul?
What?
Was, what is May Day?
What is May Day?
Most people don't know what it is.
I know, yes. You, when a plane goes down, that's what they shout. You know, May Day.
I realize that, but that has nothing to do with it.
See, that's how negative I am. You see? No. You're an optimist, and I'm...
Yeah, no, it's a celebration of... Mm-hmm. Well,
Maynus?
Yeah, Maynus with the maypole and the dance. Did you know this, Barbara?
I knew it had something to do with spring and
maypoles.
See,
everyone's not quite sure.
Everyone's a little dodgy.
DJ? Yeah, no, I definitely knew that it was bringing in the spring, but I did not know all the details.
Okay. Well, I didn't know either. I didn't know either.
You know, I had several people ask
me. You throw me, man. The show just starts and you throw something like that at me. I don't have Google up. I can't research it.
You are Google.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Now, we have two guests in studio today, and we may have a third on the phone, but we're not exactly sure. Computer's being a little dodgy. Not sure what's happening with our incoming phone
here.
See. But if we don't get her today, we'll get her on a subsequent one. But in the interim, first off, she's calling right now. How I'm going to take this call while I can. Hello, is this Linda?
No, not yet. This is Harlan.
Oh, hi, Harlan. How are you? You are actually on the air. Welcome to LA Talk Radio. You see, this is exactly what I was telling you about earlier. Is she going to make it today or not?
No, I wanted to explain why, and she wants to make it up to you later.
Oh, okay. Well, that's no problem.
We'll
talk off the air about that.
Hold on one second. We had a small incident occur with the truck that's taking over items to the church.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, when you have a situation like that, everything else runs from your mind, and she just completely forgot.
Oh, totally got it.
Well, she asked me if, she said, when the Julian auction comes up, which is planned for the fall, and they'll also deal with the house, she promises she will give you an interview that will make up for it.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Well, thank you so much, and we will take
care of that. And all of your listeners know that we've made that promise, so it'll happen.
And yes, you just told them, so we're all covered. Okay. Thank you, Harlan. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Harlan.
Thank you.
Bye now. Okay.
Of course, we were talking about Linda Hope.
We were talking about Linda Hope, the daughter of Bob and Dolores Hope,
That's
and
correct.
A charitable thing, which we will still talk about a little later.
We will.
But in the interim, two guests in studio today. First, she co-founded the Colony Theater in 1975 and has since produced most of the company's main stage productions, one of which, Falling for Make-Believe, she'll tell us about today. Please welcome the artistic director of the acclaimed Colony Theater in Burbank, Barbara Beckley.
Oh, my goodness. All those people applauding.
Lovely.
And I have to correct something.
What's
well,
that?
Not correct, but clarify. Yes, I was one of the founders of the theater in 1975, and I would like to point out I was 12.
You were 12. Okay. All right. Well, I see you're holding it up on that note card. I'll be sure to repeat that as often as well.
And having long ago established himself as one of L.A. and the Orange County's most accomplished producer, director, choreographers. He now adds artistic director and executive producer to his long list of credits from 3D theatricals. T.J. Dawson is in the house.
T.J., how are you?
Doing well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Nice to meet you.
Sir.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us.
So successful, this young man.
Oh,
I tell you.
Very successful.
We got some muckety mucks here
yes,
today,
Yes, we
Michael.
Do. With a
I should have worn a tie.
Don't you feel important?
I should have worn a tie or brought a headshot. I'm not sure which.
Or at least a headshot with a tie on.
Exactly. You know, the doctor one. We all have that one. We're going to chat with a woman later in the show who will honor the legacy of her legendary and charitable and philanthropic parents, Bob and Dolores Hope. This was Linda Hope, but she is unable to make it on the air, as you heard. but she was going to alert us to an upcoming auction to benefit St. Charles Borromeo Holy Family Service Center, because they're apparently they're auctioning off all the items from the Hope Toluca Lake House to raise money for this very important charitable organization.
Yes, and it's this weekend, so people must go and support.
Yes, it is. Actually, I have it right here. Yeah. It is the this is taking place. Let me find the proceeds of the sale. Yes, featuring hundreds of items from the couple's home will honor the Hope's legacy. And as Linda Hope says in this press release, my mother and dad would be happy to know that many of the items that gave them pleasure during their lifetimes will find new homes with their neighbors, friends, and fans, and knowing that this sale will benefit those in need here in their own community would have given them great satisfaction. This is at, it will be take place at St. Charles Borromeo Church.
Which is lovely, which is the parish of Bob and Dolores for many
years. Yes, at Lancashire and Moore Park in North Hollywood, and the hours of the sale are 9 o'clock to 4 p.m., cash only, and that is this Saturday, May 4th, and possibly May 5th, depending on how it goes. Yeah. But definitely May 4th. So there you go, Linda.
Amazing stuff.
Oh, can you imagine?
It must be just extraordinary.
Can you imagine? I'll tell you, for collectors and things, it'd be all over.
They sent me an aerial shot of the house.
Really? Oh, they sent me a Times New Roman shot.
Lady! Hi, before with this great lady!
I'm sorry.
Unbelievable.
I actually have my own, Barbara. I didn't do it, but
there you go.
But I'm always late with it. I could never get it in. So, anyway, Michael, how was your week before we talk to our lovely guest?
It was good. It was busy. It was, full of theatrical things. We had some great performances at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal, and so Matt Zarley came in. Matt was a guest with us last week from Broadway. And
Michael has one of the most popular supper club in town, the Sterling's upstairs at the Federal with Broadway.
Yeah, and it's fantastic.
Great American Songs.
That's right. TJ has been.
He's been with us. Right next to the El Portal.
Yes, in the 1926, the oldest building in the San Fernando Valley, the Federal.
It's an awesome building.
Isn't that great?
It's gorgeous.
I'm a preservationist person, and I love when old buildings are preserved and repurposed.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful.
They actually say the stage on which they sing was the vault.
Yes. Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah. Wow.
Talk about repurposing.
Oh, cool. I like that.
If you start feeling the money, it's because you're in the vault.
You're in the money.
Lovely. So, yes, and looking forward to a weekend of theater. So, I'm going to go see the show that's at the Colony Theater, and because I love, musicals. That's what we're made for.
Oh,
together,
I know. I saw the great show they did. I don't know if it was the last production, but the one before it that our friend, my old friend from Chicago, Ron Orbach, did.
Murder Mystery.
It was the last one. Yeah.
It was the last
I'll
one,
be
yes.
Back
before midnight.
And Ron and I did Laughter on the 23rd Floor together in Chicago many years ago when I was 12. Actually. I played Ron's son. But I loved that show. It was great. I'm a big fan for that thing, for that style. And what's the other great one along those lines? Wait Until Dark.
Really scary.
And you were right. The greatest parking in the history of theaters.
Absolutely.
Right there.
Yes. Oh, it's awesome.
Just, it was so
lots of it. It's kind of free.
Yeah, it delivers you there.
Yeah.
Right? Paul.
Yes.
Before I forget, last week we started talking about your fabulous vacation to Italy.
In Italy,
and you never quite finished telling
me. No, because you asked me about my favorite memory, and I wanted to tell you my least favorite memory. I'm going to have to be brief about it, but or the least favorite. I'm big into Commedia, the Commedia dell'arte characters, and we were in Venice because I did a show in college called Son of Arlecchino, which I just loved, and I got really into the characters Pantalone and Arlecchino and Dottore Colombina, and of course, if you're in Venice, everywhere you look is the masks and everything. And Michael, I don't think it's any big surprise that I am proboscically endowed. I mean, we know that. My nose is rather prominent, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it.
Explain
I've
that
been
was.
Okay. Proboscally endowed, yes. And sadly, it ends there. But so I was looking at the masks, and the guy, and I asked the guy in one of the stores, and I said, I did this production in college, and of course, and with me having a Roman nose, and he said, no, you do not have a Roman nose. You have naso di Turco. So apparently I have a Turkish nose, which I did a naso di Turco. Okay, and that's fine. I'm cool with having a Turkish nose. I don't really care. He's like, let me show you. And so now he has to get a sample to show me what... It was a gargoyle. It was a gargoyle. It wasn't even a person. It's like, you know, for an example of your nose, we have to go to fantasy. We couldn't find anything in your own species to match this thing. No. So, of course, now, every time Monica's mad at me, she just goes, Naso di Turco. So that's what happened.
I'm going to have to remember that myself.
Naso di Turco. Well, anyway, so my week was good.
That's
as
a great
well.
Curse word.
Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. Isn't it?
Really, it sounds just you frightening. Really
you know, trying to say it under your breath.
My grandmother, who passed away when she was 99, she born, you know, lived in Italy, my father's mother. She lived till she was 99, and she had the greatest thing she would say whenever she belched or something. She would always say, alla faccia di chi lo vuole male, which means, in the face of the person who thinks bad of me.
Oh.
But it's just so great.
Oh, it sounds so much better in Italian.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Alla faccia di chi lo vuole male. Anyway,
you gotta,
Michael.
You've got to write that down and send it to all three of us.
Yeah, right. I want to say that. Yeah. Yeah.
Alla faccia di chi lo vuole male?
Yeah.
Phonetically.
Yeah, of course.
Yes, of course.
Michael, give the lovely lady to your left the intro she is so aptly due.
I will. Indeed, I will. In 1993, she received Women in Theater's Outstanding Contribution Award and has served on the peer review committees of the Pasadena Arts Council and the L.A. County Arts Commission. For 3 years, she served as president of the Board of Theater, L.A., now L.A. Stage Alliance, and in 1999, she received the James A. Doolittle Ovation Award for Leadership in L.A. Theater. In 2000, as artistic director of the Colony Theater, she led it to its new home, a 200-seat equity theater created for it by the city of Burbank. And it's a gorgeous theater, I might add. Here to discuss the final production in their 2012-2013 season of premieres, the world premiere of Falling for Make-Believe, please welcome Barbara Beckley.
Hello, Barbara.
How are you? Hello. I do have to correct one thing. Little typo there in my bio. Yes. It's a 270-seat theater.
It is. It is. It's not. It's not an error in your bio. It's correct in your bio. Michael had a little hiccup.
What did
there.
I? Did I?
You
have
said
a 200. Error?
You said 200.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It's 270.
Columbia says 270. So it does. My bad.
Well, that's all the time we have.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
Damn it. So nice meeting you. Yeah.
So, Barbara, I got to say, before you talk about the current production, I have to say how impressed I was by something that happened when I came to the theater to see Ron Orbach's show, as I said. And it was completely unrelated to the event of the show, and it was completely unrelated to the content. It was what you said at the beginning of the show. You came out and you addressed everybody. First of all, when the artistic director of the actual theater comes out and speaks to you, there's just much more of a sense of importance and event to it, because that's the artistic director. Director of the theater, right up there,
right.
Puts a face to the place.
But oh, that's with, nice.
With
thank you.
All of the stuff that's going on with so many theaters, especially in this day and age, that are struggling with financing and getting shows up, and where we live in Los Angeles, it's difficult to get people out to live theater out here. But what you said just about it was so honest and completely unaffected, and it was just like, look, here's where we're at. Here's the little thing you got to mail in. You know, here's the thing. And it was just, and the way the audience received it, it was just like, it was a great pitch for the theater, a great explanation of the situation that so many theaters find themselves in now. But it was just so elegant and done in such a classy way that it just really, it set the evening off very nicely, I thought.
Well, that's really nice.
You know, so much of the time you just sort of sit through, you just say, okay, they got to do this, and you sit through it. But it was fun, it was interesting, it was informative, and I really wanted to let you know that my wife felt that way too. So
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So tell us about what's coming up. And
yes.
If I remember correctly, that evening you mentioned that there was some sort of tie with a family member, with a Hart family member. What is the connection? Was it or how you guys got the rights for this world premiere?
Well, it came to us. Mark Saltzman brought it to us. We some years ago we did the world premiere of Mark's play Clutter, the true story of the Collier brothers who never threw anything out. And it was a wonderful experience. It was a nice hit for us. It was a big hit for us. And we had such a great experience with Mark and remained friends. And so, and Mark has a relationship with the Rodgers and Hammerstein organization that controls the rights to Rodgers and Hart.
Okay.
And they had approached him about, for the first time, telling the real story of Lorenz Hart, which has always been... swept kind of, well, it's always been, frankly, in the closet.
Wow.
Because he was a deeply closeted gay man in an era when that was frowned upon socially and was illegal. He could lose his career, he could go to jail, all those things. And so the rights holders have always kind of sat on that story, and they finally decided it's time to tell it. Mm-hmm. And they approached Mark because they have some other of the works that Mark has written, and he came to us. And that was 2 years ago.
Wow.
So we've been working on it ever since
then.
Wow, that's exciting.
And very exciting.
And here's the amazing thing is that he had access to the entire Rodgers and Hart canon.
Wow.
And what's so amazing and kind of wonderful is all of these songs, or most of them, there's some unfamiliar ones that are so beautiful, but most of them are My Funny Valentine and My Heart Stood Still and Where or When and Go On, Bewitched, Blue Moon. These are songs that we all know by heart.
Right.
But so many of the people in our audience, they walk out saying, gee, I had no idea the same two guys wrote all of those songs that are so meaningful and that mean so much. And that combined with this incredibly moving story, because the thing about Larry Hart is that he was deeply, profoundly, hopelessly romantic. And all you have to do is read his lyrics
to know
that.
Sure.
In an era when he couldn't do anything about it, so he drank. And drank himself to death at the age of 48.
Wow.
Just tragic, tragic circumstances. But on top of that are all these incredibly beautiful songs and the way Mark has woven it together. So it's not a jukebox musical.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just an excuse to sing
the song. It's not a review. Yeah.
It's a real story. With a beginning, middle, and end, and true, and absolutely true. And audiences are just, the reviews have been amazing.
I'm
and
looking at this here.
Yes, going, LA Times.
Going crazy. Critics' Choice. And
Critics' Choice. Though the late Lorenz Hart stands near peerless among Broadway's lyricists, his tortured private life remains largely until Falling for Make-Believe at the Colony Theater, wherein a grand cast and 21 classic songs propel Mark Salzman's musical, Audiences Should Be Bewitched. That's the direct from the LA Times.
Perfect.
The story is not dissimilar from Montgomery Clift's story, where he just drank to sort of cope with the fact that he couldn't be out about who he was as a person and about his sexuality.
Well, one of the things that Mark has said, and it's there in his program notes too, that the thing is, so many of the people of that era in our profession were gay and so closeted. Their close friends knew, but the public certainly didn't know. Noel Coward was flamboyant. You know, give me a break. Cole Porter was happily married. And as I said, the inner circle knew, but nobody else did. And so what Mark has said is because families were totally freaked out at the idea of this information coming out, that they burned when the person died, they burned letters and notes and journals, and that history is lost because anybody who knows anything about it is now dead. So biographers are looking at essentially a blank page when it comes to one's private life. It's the history is just not there because it didn't start coming out until like the 70s, and even there was a classic definitive biography of Larry Hart written 9 years ago, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the author's name, that contains not one lyric. Not one of his brilliant lyrics, because he couldn't get the rights to tell the true story.
Cool. One of the things you mentioned earlier, speaking of lyrics, is what I love about shows like this is hearing those gems that you don't hear often. The little ones that aren't as well known. Because, you know, it's always nice to hear new interpretations of the classics. But those ones that are just lesser known, that's when I leaned forward in my chair.
That's a wonderful discovery. There's a song I never knew called Nobody's Heart. The first line is, Nobody's Heart Belongs to Me. Hmm. And where it lands in the show, it just rips your heart out.
Wow.
It's just so moving. Oh, there was something else I was wanting to say about that. It'll come to me.
Awesome. So is there, obviously the show's a hit already right out of the gate. Is there room for extension on the run? Are you?
Well, it would be nice. Yeah. It would be nice. We shall see. It's an expensive show to run.
Yes.
So we'll see about that. But there's one other thing I wanted to say about the music and the lyrics, that hearing them over and over and over again, and Mark has pointed this out, that Richard Rodgers actually did his greatest work with Larry Hart. We all love Rodgers and Hammerstein. Nobody loves them more than I do. But it's all kind of straight ahead, you know? Whereas with Larry Hart, you get, for instance, a really fun, upbeat lyric like My Funny Valentine, Sweet Comic Valentine, You Make Me Smile, with Your Looks Are Laughable. You know? And yet Rodgers has written this yearning melody. So there's a beautiful depth and tension there. Similarly, Falling for Make-Believe, the lyrics are deeply sad, deeply cynical. Falling with love is falling for make-believe.
Wow.
You know,
yeah.
I fell in love, but love fell out with me. You know, it's hard. And yet Rodgers has written this beautiful lyrical waltz. Again, you get that depth and that tension in the songs. That's just so brilliant. That never occurs in the songs of Rodgers and Hart, of Rodgers and Hammerstein. I thought of what I wanted to say about talking about the lyrics. There, Mark is so brilliant because lyric writing is essentially an internal, intellectual, undramatic exercise.
Right.
Yet Mark has found in a couple of sequences places where Larry Hart is writing lyrics on the stage, and it's delightful, and it's fun, and it's wonderful.
Oh, the actor Larry Hart is right.
There's a whole scene where he's working on I Could Write a Book, and it's just wonderful. It's so delightful and charming and funny.
It sounds great. You reminded me of something when you were talking about that juxtaposition of lyrics to music. One of my favorite performers is Tom Waits, one of his a great quote of his right along those lines is that he goes, I love beautiful melodies telling me terrible things.
Yeah.
And it's just that, you know, that switch is just, you know, that it makes things more powerful. It's almost like when you watch a movie and something really troubling is happening, but the music is very up and happy.
Working in opposition that way.
Yeah, it makes it
really interesting and powerful.
And you've got some wonderful Southland Regional Musical Theater stars in the production.
Ben Goldberg and Brett Rybak and Rebecca Ann Johnson and Tyler. Tyler, who sings like an angel.
Yes, he does.
Tyler Milliron, the voice of an angel.
Yeah.
And to hear him sing My Funny Valentine and My Heart Stood Still. I could listen to it forever.
Well, we're going to tell people how they can listen to it.
Yes, we are.
It's the Colony Theater, which is 555 North 3rd Street at Cypress, adjacent to the Burbank Town Center Mall. And for tickets, you can call the Colony Theater box office at 818-558-7000, extension 15, or online at www.colonytheater.org. Remember, theater is the R-E spelling, colonytheater.org, and we'll throw that out there
before
the end of the hour. Definitely.
Barbara, now you've had a career as an actress as well, have you not?
That's what
Tell
I said.
Tell us
that's
about
where
that. How did you start? What was your, I always like to ask this, where were you, when did it happen, when did it strike you that you had to be a part of the performing arts?
At a very, very young age.
Yes.
Okay, I'm really dating myself now. But I grew up in New Rochelle, New York. And so my parents started taking me to Broadway shows when I was a little kid. Broadway in those days was a very, very big deal.
Still is?
It still is, but it was kind of different in those days.
A little more glamorous back then.
Well, it was the tastemaker for the entire country back in those days. And the very first show I ever saw was... wait for it, Mary Martin and Peter Pan.
Oh, God.
That was a 1978 remake, though, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I will tell you, I still remember the exact moment, and we all know it, when Tink is dying, the second act, and it's because children don't believe in fairies anymore, and Peter turns to us and he says, we have to save Tinkerbell. If you believe in fairies, clap your hands. And I still remember... this little girl sitting there clapping till almost to my hands bled to bring Tinkerbell back to life. And it worked. She lived.
Oh, that's the sweetest story.
And that was the end of it for me. Yeah. I was done. I was done. And it's so funny because I have an older sister, my sister Lucy, and my mother, when she saw a show that she thought we would enjoy, she would surprise us with tickets in our Christmas stockings or Easter baskets or whatever. And so Lucy and I would go. Two little girls. How we got there, my father's secretary, you know, would walk us to the theater, and then we'd sit there. And then when the show was over, I didn't want to leave. I wanted to find the stage door. I wanted to get backstage and talk to the people and be part of that world. And Lucy was done. I mean, she had a wonderful time at the show. Yeah. She loved it, but it was over, and she was ready to leave. Yeah. And I thought she was just something really odd about her, really missing, really strange. And it wasn't until years later that I realized she was normal. Uh-huh. And I was the one who was odd.
Yeah.
So anyway, I knew from a very young age I wanted to be part of that world. And in those days, the only thing really open, or the only thing I wanted, was to be up there on the stage doing what I saw these people doing.
Right, right.
And I went to the Neighbor Playhouse, and for some time, I'm still a member of SAG and Equity. I still get SAG residual checks for, you know, like a dollar and a half. But then
that's a dollar more than mine are, so you're doing well.
but then as time went on, and we started the Colony, and I really discovered I liked being in charge. I liked being able to speak up. It would drive me crazy having to sit there and disagree with a director or disagree with whatever, or not being able to...
Not to be able to voice your opinion.
Not being able to voice my opinion.
Yeah.
I really liked being in charge. So when our founding artistic director left 9 years in, it kind of landed in my lap, and... The rest
Who was the founding artistic director?
Oh, he was a wonderful, wonderful guy, Terrence Schenck.
Okay.
And he was an absolute Renaissance man. He picked the plays, he directed, he designed the sets, designed the lights, designed the sound before sound design was was one of those
practices.
Common practices and credits. He was just terrific. But 9 years in, he was really just ready to move on, for which I blame him not at all. Wow. And he did and had a very successful career in running theater in Florida, and it landed in my lap, and as I said, the rest is history.
Wow. And you've got Trent Steelman over
there.
Oh,
we've got
you?
Trent.
He's a lovely man.
Holds
very
it
talented.
All together. Yeah. Holds it all together.
I just loved that venue. I'd never been over there before, Ron.
It's really
Ron's
beautiful.
You were always pushing me to
yes,
go over there, and
yes,
then I finally
absolutely.
Did, and I'm so
City
grateful
of Burbank
I did.
Put it there for us, and they did.
Fantastic.
They're so good to us.
Yeah. Well, it needs to stay there.
You know, there's 270 seats in that theater.
There is.
You know
that? You got it right this time.
Before we move on, remind me when we get to the point. I want to ask you that same question because I find that in terms of when you realized it was what you wanted to do.
Oh, absolutely.
We'll get to it, but I want to make sure.
It's oddly a similar story. I'll be excited to share it.
You're talking about residuals. You know that out of the blue the other day, I was contacted by SAG, and I have $1,000-some-odd of residuals from my young acting career. They've been sitting there for years and years.
Oh,
and years.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah,
how exciting.
Really?
That's very exciting.
I tell you, if you have $1,000 in residuals, you got a lot of checks over there.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a bar in Toluca Lake called Residuals where if you went in and they had all the small checks behind the bar, and then if you went in and you had a check that was less than a dollar, you got a free drink?
No
if
way.
If you could give the check? Yeah.
I know, that's a great idea.
I'm sure it is. Someone told me about it. I don't
that's
know if,
just,
it was,
so brilliant.
If it was urban legend brilliant. Or if it ever existed, but I would have gone there.
That's a great marketing.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Great marketing.
Very much.
We're certainly not finished, but let's throw it out there again. This is Falling for Make Believe at the Colony Theater, 555 North 3rd Street at Cypress, adjacent Burbank Town Center Mall. For tickets, 818-558-7000, extension 15, or go online at colonytheater, that's theaterre.org. This is the LA Times Critics' Choice, folks, so be sure to catch this one.
And I have to say something, because I left out some actors who are also brilliant. I did say Rebecca Ann Johnson.
Yes.
Who? Oh my gosh.
She's lovely.
She does
just
Lady is a Tramp,
Love
and she sings.
Recently.
She sings Bewitched. You just. No, I'm sorry. Blue Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, the sequence
right
where she sings Blue Moon.
Right up her alley.
Oh, it's just so gorgeous. And then also delightful Megan Moran, uh-huh. who plays multiple roles, including Dorothy Rogers, and sings a very funny version of Isn't It Romantic. And the great Jeffrey Landman, who plays a real person, Doc Bender, mm-hmm. who was Larry's agent and enabler. Mm-hmm. Really bad guy. And Jeffrey is so wonderful. He played Gavroche on Broadway as a child actor in Les Mis. Isn't that fun? And he gets to do Falling in Love with Love. And
which
is
one of my
wonderful.
Favorite songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Love
the
that
Andy Williams version kills me because he made it so famous. Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it was famous, but he just kind of pushed it into the pop market there. So
Falling in Love with Love?
Yeah.
I have to listen to that.
Great arrangement of it, like gangbusters. I can't wait to see it tomorrow night, so I will look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you.
And seeing this beautiful show that we're talking about. Paul.
I will introduce our other guest.
Please do.
This now, but before we do, Parade is a tragic and true story of the 1913 trial of a Brooklyn-born Jewish factory manager, Leo Frank, who was accused of raping and murdering a 13-year-old employee, Mary Fagan. Already guilty in the eyes of those around him, the trial, sensationalized by the media, aroused anti-Semitic tensions in Atlanta and the state of Georgia. This award-winning musical was first produced on Broadway at the Vivian Beaumont Theater on December 17, 1998, and was directed by Harold Prince. Although it closed after only 84 regular performances, the musical made such an impact that it won Tony Awards for Best Book and Best Original Score out of 9 nominations. It also won 6 Drama Desk Awards. 3D Theatricals is delighted to present opportunity for you to enjoy this poignant musical theater event. And here to tell us about it is the director of this acclaimed production and also the artistic director of 3D Theatricals. Please welcome T.J. Dawson.
Hello, hey, sir.
Hello.
Why do you think that was with Parade? Because, I mean, you saw it recently.
Well, I saw the... Are you doing the Donmar version of it?
Well, it's kind of a funny thing. The answer is yes, in meaning that now the Lincoln Center production is no longer available to be licensed. They only licensed the Donmar production. However, the cast is the it's insanely huge. It's the original Lincoln Center onstage cast of 36 people.
So it is
massive, and kind of, in my opinion, I loved what they did, of course, at the Mark Taper and earlier in the London production at the Donmar Warehouse. And so creative, and actually made this production, which unfortunately does not get widely produced, more affordable for smaller venues to take the chance on the title. For us, we have like a 1,300 seat, you know, barn of a house, so we just really wanted the impact of that score to still have that really gigantic feel to it. So, yeah.
Well, it's a very emotional show and very, very sensitive and very beautiful, and at least certainly the only version I've seen, which was at the Taper,
right,
and the Donmar production, was just entrancing.
But I remember I remember you speaking very favorably about it at the time, and I'm always curious about why on Broadway did it not do, was it just that it, I think maybe people don't often go to a musical for something that has that sort of weight.
They don't,
it.
Yeah, and it's, I think unfortunately, sometimes there's just a right time and a wrong time, and I feel that unfortunately Parade was, it more than likely when it was on Broadway, it was just the wrong time for it, and I think with a drama, people, I feel like they go, when they go to a play, it's easier to go see The Death of a Salesman, and you know when you go to a play that you're going to get into something really possibly dark and deep, and you know, be profoundly affected in some way. When the general public go to a musical, they feel like they're going to walk in the door, forget their troubles, and laugh and walk out humming the, you know, songs and, all of those, you know, things. But you know, for me, I very much actually look up to the Colony Theater, which is really cool that we happen to be here today together, because you know, the Colony takes enormous risks on producing and bringing shows that are so important to our community. And for us being, you know, this most of the in the area, most of the regional theaters here, you know, are producing the titles that are safe. Mm-hmm. And for me, I feel like in producing a title like Parade, it's so important to, especially with true stories, to bring those things to our public, educate our audiences about these kinds of situations, and learn from those that came before us so that we don't repeat the mistakes of the ones who came before us. So I'm so thrilled to be bringing something I feel so important to.
Well,
I
must say, TJ, about you, that the one thing is really, and like Barbara too, I know that she's just as passionate, but you really have done something down there. You have saved that situation in Orange County.
Oh, thank you.
Plummer Auditorium is where 3D Theatricals does their shows, and it's a beautiful venue.
Thanks.
It really is. It's a large venue.
Yes. Yeah,
large. You've got 270 seats. Can you believe that?
So that's just in the lobby. it's gorgeous. And then you take your shows, and will this be one of them, that goes over to Redondo Beach?
Yes.
Because you've also rescued that situation over there with the former South Bay Civic Light Opera.
Yeah, thank you. This is the one show, unfortunately, that just the dates, by the time we were working out the whole situation in Redondo, this was the one that was unavailable. So it's the one. This is the only opportunity to see it. Is its limited run in Orange County. The rest of the shows for the season do go to the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center.
So remember that, folks.
All the reason to buy tickets now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now
it's a drive, but it's going to be well worth the drive. It's going
to
be.
What is the drive, by the way, from here to from Los Angeles to Fullerton?
Oh, honestly, it's not horrible if you hit in the right pocket. It's could be anywhere around 40, 45 minutes and no traffic.
But doesn't the Amtrak stops right there? It's minutes
away absolutely.
From the theater.
Practically walking distance
exactly.
If you want to take the train. It's,
exactly.
And that's
go early, get dinner.
Yeah.
Go early, get, situate
yourself
locally. And
it's a great, the downtown area has tons of awesome restaurants. Mm-hmm.
I always push that. We talk about this all the time.
Yes.
And Colony is the same way. It's one of the places where you can park and then be done with it and then go. Because one of the reasons that New York and Chicago kicks our butt in terms of live theater is because you can just meet there and you don't have to park. You can park and just, anyway. Don't get me on that.
Yeah, we've got tons of great restaurants in walking distance.
No,
too.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh,
it's great.
Yes, you do.
Parade is at the Plummer Auditorium. That's 201 East Chapman Avenue in Fullerton. For tickets, 714-589-2770 or www.3dtshows.com. That's 3dtshows.com.
I'm just looking at your cast list. You've got some amazing people in this too, like Zach Ford and
I love him.
Yeah, he's
Robert
awesome.
Yacco, who's so wonderful.
Oh God,
Harrison White, I see here, and
Norman Large.
Norman Large, the great Norman Large.
Yes, yeah,
he's wonderful. Hugh Dorsey. So many.
That's
many.
An embarrassment of riches.
Oh, yes. When I go to rehearsal every night and. What's the we have the actor who's playing Leo Frank, Jeff Scowron. He has a wealth of work behind him, but is not really well known in the theater circuit in Los Angeles. And his performance is astounding. And that's everyone's performance in the show. And there's I love, because we really, when we audition a show, we really, really want to make sure that we're going to provide the best show possible. So we don't really give too much weight to, necessarily the body of work behind. It's just going to be what you're going to bring to the particular project. And so the gal that we found for Lucille Frank is heartbreakingly brilliant and brand new. I mean, she's non-union and she's, I think it's what's really exciting is she's on the cusp of her career is about to kind of, I think, explode. And so that's what's really exciting is that, in the midst of, we also have Rufus Bonds Jr., who created the role of Jim Conley in the original Broadway production, creating his part for us again.
Wow.
So that's kind of unusual to get in a regional production, someone recreating the part they did on Broadway. You can get original Broadway cast members, but in a different role or what have you. But it just kind of says what the piece means to people. And, he's thrilled to be doing it. And Robert Yacco, who is in the Mark Taper production. And so it's the cast going to rehearsal every night.
It's a glorious voice.
Oh, man. Yeah. Everyone. And it literally, the stage manager, I was rehearsing a scene in another room, and the stage manager was coming up to us to let us know what we were going into next. And she just walked into something and started bawling. And because the rehearsals have been so powerful already and just like stumble throughs and stuff. So it's, I mean, the material is great, but when you have these kinds of actors bringing it to life, you will not see anything like this. It's just gonna, with this amount of people.
And I must say, too, you as the director, because you're a good director, you must be
thank you.
So happy to be directing something that you're so passionate about.
I feel like my creative juices have totally, I mean, I have not felt like this in I can't tell you how long.
It's just feels amazing. Right.
And then everything feels right. With his musical director, his David Lamoureux, who
yes.
is like unbelievable.
Brilliant.
Yes. I just went to, we supported a chorus line down in
London. Oh, yeah,
musical
of course.
Theater West.
Yeah.
And I told David after the show, that orchestra sounded like
pristine.
A CD
yep.
of the show. It was so gorgeously mixed, and it was the playing, you know, those musicians. I don't know how many people were in the orchestra, but...
I think the chorus line is around 16 or something.
Yeah, it was lush and so exciting. You know, that music especially, that dance music is amazing. And Parade has the same kind of beautiful threads of music.
And we have Tom Butterwitz designing a brand new set for it, who's brilliant, as you know. Sean LeBlanc is designing a brand new set of costumes. So it's going to... It's going to be pretty epic, I think. I'm excited about it.
I'm very excited to see it coming up, opening on May 10th and 11th, I think, is the press
May
opening.
10th, yeah.
Yeah, May 10th is our soft opening, and May 11th is the press opening, yeah.
Okay, so TJ, the question that we asked Barbara earlier, when was your moment?
You know, it's oddly enough, so I'm dating, everyone has been saying when they were 12, so I'm, everyone calls me 12, so I'm the young kid in town, but... I actually was at a production of Peter Pan at the Pantages Theater
and
saw Kathy Rigby.
Yeah.
And
greatest
it
ever.
Literally blew my mind. I was in the balcony, and at the end, she flew up, and I literally felt like she was flying to me. And that afterwards, she was so gracious, because I was the same way. I was like, I got to go to the stage door. I have to be a part of this. And I was very precocious when I was a child. After that moment, actually, I saw Cats. I think it was at the Schubert here in town. God rest its soul. And I went, when everyone could do the walk around to look at the set, and Old Deuteronomy sits on the stage, and I wandered away from people and made my way backstage into the dressing room, full of cats and dancers laying all over the place, and because I wanted to meet the white cat. That's who I wanted to meet. So anyway, but with Kathy Rigby after the show, she spent so much time with every single child that came.
And still does.
Yeah, she just had her closing performance after, oh my gosh, how many years has she been doing it? A long time. She's the longest running Peter Pan, I think, ever. And she just closed in Boston, where she first opened. And I love that family. They're wonderful, wonderful people. We're now actually close friends, which is kind of cool. But she kind of launched me into doing what I do. And my parents, of course, wanted me to do something that made money. Yeah. But I decided I wanted to do something that I love. So.
And as a young man, he does 3D, is because he's got two siblings that are involved here, too.
That's very much involved.
Yeah, the 3D comes from Dawson siblings. My wife and I kind of share a D, and then my brother and my sister have a D. So.
And your brother's a super talented performer.
Yeah, he's out on a Disney cruise ship right now, being the dance captain and dancing on the high seas, and my sister's here in town involved. So.
Yeah.
Involved in theater.
Yeah, yeah, the whole family.
Your poor parents.
I know. They get so stressed out, but I have to say, like, the best thing ever is we've had, as much as they initially, when we were expressing interest, were terrified at the notion, because my mother actually majored in theater and in college, and she was like, don't do it, don't do it. But as soon as she saw kind of the abilities that we had, they have been so amazing to encourage us to chase our dreams no matter where they take us. So it's important to teach our youth that.
And they were right to.
Thank you.
Awesome. And ladies and gentlemen, one more time, just to give some info about Parade coming up, Plummer Auditorium in Fullerton. It's just 45 minutes south of Los Angeles. And it is on stage as of May 10th, as in a preview, and it opens officially May 11th, and it will continue its run there through the 26th of May. And tickets are very reasonably priced, and they're very simple to get a hold of. You simply can go directly to the box office, or you can call them at 714-589-2770, extension 1, or go to the website for 3D Theatrical, and that's 3-D Theatrical. Am I saying it right?
Theatricals,
Theatricals, excuse me. 3D ctshows.com is really what it is.
Yep.
And while we're throwing this information out there, the show at the Colony Theater is Falling for Make-Believe, and that website is colonytheater.org, when theater, once again, is the R-E spelling, colonytheater.org, or 818-558-7000, extension 15. It's that time,
it
Michael.
It is that time.
It's 5 minutes to the end of the show when we ask our guests. It's a good sign. It's a good sign when it moves that fast, you know?
So why don't we start with you, TJ? Because I think Barbara was trying to still think a little bit about that. So go ahead and tell us what your memory
was. For first-time listeners, we always ask our guests to relate a story that they either experienced or have heard about a theatrical mishap or disaster for a show that they were working on.
Man.
Usually funny, though. Just, you know, I don't want to hear dismemberment or anything.
Yeah, no. Luckily, I don't have any of the dismemberment stories. There are quite a few, but the one that comes to mind right away is we were producing a production of The Wizard of Oz, and that's the, you know, every producer's nightmare. You have everything you never want in a show: dogs, children, fire, flying, and you don't ever want to deal with any of those things. We also had projections in the show during the tornado sequence. So anyway, Dorothy was on her way back from Oz to Kansas at the end of the show, and the screen came in, and tornado started, and all of a sudden a Mac screen is from proscenium to proscenium, wall to wall, and it was, they could not get it to unfreeze. It was on opening night. Press all out throughout the house. Thank God they were gracious and it got great notices, but it literally, I literally, it was so poignant because the stage manager, all you could hear over the headset was, oh no. There was just nothing you could do.
That was one of those moments, just hope it goes away.
That's
hysterical.
And it sat there the entire time until Oz went away and Dorothy came back. There was no helping it. So that never happened again after our production meeting following that show. But yeah,
that is hysterical.
And somebody died.
Yeah, right. Me inside. Yeah.
Barbara, you're on.
Well, this didn't happen to me. It's just my favorite story. It's in William Redfield's book, Letters from an Actor, which is a wonderful, wonderful book. But anyway, it's a story about Johnny Weissmuller, I believe, became an actor after he was an Olympic champion. And this was actually in a play in San Francisco where he was playing Mowgli, the wolf boy, and for some reason found himself in this very shishy, upscale society home. And there was a moment when he was supposed to pull a gun and shoot this other guy on stage at the climax. And he pulled the gun and pulled the trigger and nothing happened. It misfired, which is always that nightmare, the gun misfires. So he stopped, and then he reached for the knife that was in his in his belt, and he went over to the guy and grabbed the guy. This actor was a little scared because he was a little out of control.
What's gonna happen?
And he raised his hand up and plunged the knife into the guy's chest, except the knife was rubber and it bent. At which point the audience was getting into the spirit of it and saying, he's not dead yet. Try something else. From the audience. So then he dragged the actor over to the window where there were curtains and pulled the curtain, the cord from the curtain, started wrapping around his neck.
Wow.
The poor actor's just dying. The other actor was trying to get killed. And still somebody yelled, no, try something else. And so finally, the actor was blubbering on his knees, the other actor who was supposed to die. And John Weissmuller pulled his fist high and then came down and stopped it just as he got to the forehead. And he said, and then pressed and said, I kill you with my poison ring. Like the poor actor collapsed on the stage and the audience into applause.
The audience, chiming in reminds me of the great story in the David Sedaris book when he talks about the vanity production of Diary of Anne Frank that Pia Zadora did in London's West End. And just was the most horrible production ever. It turns out that there wasn't one, but they said it was just so bad that when Nazis stormed the stage in the beginning of Act 3, an audience member was prompted to stand up and shout, "She's in the attic!"
Oh, that's so awful.
Isn't that terrible? Imagine?
But it turns out, he tells that, I saw him in concert, if you will, saying it, and what's so funny about it is that he gets to the end of the story and admits that it never actually took place. There was never a production of Diary of Anne. And so he says, "So I'll never tell that story again." But he does it every single time. Yeah, it's the
so
biggest
good.
Ever. We're out of time, Michael.
Thank you so much for coming.
What a
awesome.
Joy to have both of you here and the latest, two great productions.
So. Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, Parade Fullerton at the Plummer Auditorium. Don't miss it. It opens May 10th, and it runs throughout the month of May. And also at the beautiful Colony Theater is Falling for Make-Believe.
Yay. Thank you so much, and great having you both. Michael, as always,
thank
great
you,
to
Paul.
Be on the mic with you.
See
and
see you on the radio.
See you next week.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.